Welcome to the Idea Talks, where we discuss big ideas. The Idea Talks is a weekly podcast with Josh Tice and other leaders on big ideas for life, leadership, and ministry. And I'm your co-host, Drew Polvencia. For more information on this podcast, visit ideanetwork.church. Welcome to this edition of the Idea Talks. On today's episode, we are speaking early in the morning.
Yeah, from our perspective.
Deathbed preparation.
Yeah, it seems like an odd topic that we'd bring up. And why are we talking about deathbed preparation? I mean, is it one of these, do you know today if you died, you'd go to heaven? Well, right. I mean, we assume some of our audience is
we're hoping if you listen to this podcast, that's in the bank, you're good on that one.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, I don't know, maybe you found this podcast and you don't know what you would do if you were to die. You're not sure of your eternal salvation. We're actually going to touch just a tad on that a little later. Yeah. Because if you have never been born again, you need to be born again. We're going to talk about that. But today, most of you are ministry leaders as you listen to this podcast, and you might be wondering, what do you mean by deathbed preparation?
Yeah, when I record these episodes with you, I often think about, like, what is our audience doing when they're listening to it? And I think about, like, you know, the young pastor who's on the treadmill getting some motivation this morning. Might be a little different tone than our summer episodes, but we promise we'll try to make sure we leave you with some inspiration and help going forward. So before we get into the episode, we want to talk about some very special events happening later on this year with the Idea Network.
Yeah, we're really excited because coming up on September 19th, that's right, it's only a few months away, is the Idea Night. Now, the Idea Night is our local event. As many of you that follow the network know, we have multiple kinds of events. Sure, we have virtual roundtables every week on Tuesdays, but we have national events every 2 years called the Idea Summit, which we had back in January of this year, and that takes place every other year. Then we have regional events. Those are Idea Days that take place in regions, parts of the country where we have 150, 200 or so delegates that show up. And then we have local events, and that happens every single year. These local events are called Idea Nights, where really the goal is only to get together with 10 to 30 or 40 other ministry leaders. And it's coming up here on September 19th.
Yeah, there's two groups of people we are looking for these specific Idea Nights. Those of you that want to host an Idea Night, and those of you that want to attend an Idea Night. And you say, if I want to be a host, what's some of the criteria for that? Do I have to, like, submit my statement of faith and give you my Excel spreadsheets of who I separated from in the last 5 years?
Correct. Yeah, we want to know exactly what you wear. In the pulpit and, you know, when you go to bed. We're also very interested in what kind of shoes you wear.
Yeah. More specifically, what you listen to when you're working out. Because that's the leading edge of your carnality.
If it's the podcast, then we're very happy.
Yeah.
We're very happy. Now, look, here's the thing. If you do want to host, we do have some criteria, and that is that you are willing to get together with other ministry leaders in your local community. We want you to be an encouraging leader. That's who we are at the Idea Network. We want to share ideas and encourage the brotherhood. And so if you're a ministry leader out in Tennessee, if you're a ministry leader up in Washington, if you're a ministry leader anywhere that is that has local ministry leaders around you you'd like to get together with, we would love for you to host an Idea Night. And all you have to do to apply is contact Corey Knopf at engagement@ideanetwork.church. That's right, just email him, engagement@ideanetwork.church, and we can get you signed up. Now, there's not yet registrations open for the locations quite yet. That'll be coming about next month or the following. So you'll be able to pick of one of 50 different locations across the country to attend an Idea Night. But if you want to host, now is the time to apply. All right, today we're joined by Rodney Holloman, a friend of mine and somebody that we've gotten to know over the years. In fact, one time I was traveling through Tennessee with my family. We stopped at Rodney's church and had a wonderful church service. And I'll never forget, Rodney, at the end of the service, my three children were ready to go, and he pulled out of his pocket three $5 bills and gave them to my children and said, "It's not easy being a pastor's kid. You need some money to go with that." And he gave my kids have never forgotten that moment. Rodney, welcome to the show. Right there. What's that?
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, we need to love on each other's kids, don't we?
Yeah.
Who visits the pastor's kids? Who visits the deacon's kids? Who loves on them? So,
well, you were a great blessing to our kids, and you've been a great blessing to me to get to know you over the years. But our audience needs to get to know you, so let's do that.
It's definitely a way to make a lasting impression. So I love that. So let's talk to you a little bit about Rodney. So Rodney is currently the pastor of Hardin Valley Baptist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is a revitalization work where he's served for the last 8 years.
Yeah, that's right. He has an incredible amount of ministry experience that includes youth ministry, pastoral ministry, and even taught Greek and systematic theology for 10 years at a Christian college.
But the experience that makes Rodney especially qualified to speak with us today on the Idea Talks is that Rodney is among the few who actually had a deathbed experience, and he's here with us today so we can learn more about Rodney's journey. Rodney, we appreciate you once again on the podcast. Look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and how you came through your deathbed experience.
Sure. My wife is Andrea. We met through Pensacola Christian College, and we've been married 26 and a half years. I better get that date right. God's given us two children, Allison, Riley. Allison's 23. She teaches at Christian school. Our son, Riley, is 20. He's working through college. We've got one child with the Lord. And so this has been kind of our family unit. And we've been here. And my story kind of picks up 2019. That summer, I'd had pneumonia. Couldn't get rid of it. Felt some better, was because we're in a revitalization or a comeback church. That sounds a lot better than revitalizations, fewer syllables. I ended up, even though I was kind of sick, I ended up taking our group to the Wilds camp, our teenagers, and felt a lot better. Came back, took my daughter to school. She didn't have a car at the time, and had basically a last appointment with my lung doctor. And it was so casual, I didn't even see him. I saw the PA, and they'd been taking x-rays all summer, kind of as a matter of course. And that last visit, and it was actually on the day of the Idea night. I was in there popping through, took the x-ray, and then they held me. And she came in, long face, and said, "You're going to have a scan tomorrow." And I said, "No, ma'am, I've spent all this money all summer. I'm not having a scan." And she kept on. I got kind of uppity with her. I said, "It's going to be somebody besides you tell me I've got to have a scan tomorrow." She said, "Well, I've talked to the doctor on duty. He agrees." And I kept pressing, and she pulled up the x-ray, and basically 3.5 weeks till then, I had at least one tumor that grew about 3.5 inches. And that was just one of them. And she threw everything out the window and just bedside manner, and "You have to do this." And that started a process. Went to the Idea night, hosted at the church. And about 1:30 in the morning, I knew I was in real trouble. I knew it was a mess. And so I'm in bad shape. And so I had to start going through in my head, basically, I'm not gonna see another anniversary. I'm not walking anybody down an aisle. I'm not going to anybody's graduation. And I've got to get used to this thought in my head that unless something drastically changes quickly, again, this was an enormous problem I had. So Wednesday I had the scan. They moved heaven and earth. I had the scan. Scan was red. Thursday, the doctor was double booked. They triple booked him. He came in with a big spiel. I put my hand up and said, "Doc, it's not doing what it's supposed to. It means it's cancer. It's growing like crazy. It means it's metastasized." I said, "It's in my lymph nodes. That means it's at least lymphoma. And I don't need a lung doctor. I need an oncologist." And he closed his clipboard and he looked at me and said, "That's exactly right." He walked me out. He pulled in three people. I would find out later four. He said, "You're not doing anything else this afternoon. Mr. Holloman has to have all of these tests, all of these things. He has to have them immediately." And so they started. Well, one lady was on hold. She put out her cell phone. She's demanded I had to have a PET scan on Friday. And the guy gave me a PET scan while he was eating his lunch. They worked me in. And then about 3 o'clock, I told my wife that Thursday afternoon, I was in really bad shape. On Friday afternoon, I got out of the scan about 1 at 3 or so. I was preparing to tell my son and daughter who was at school. I told my brother he had gone and gotten her. And so he was going to be in there with her while we did it over FaceTime. And she and the phone rang and they'd gotten the results. Again, that was 1 o'clock. This is 3 o'clock. They got the results. The doctor called me. He wasn't able to finish. He was he was audibly upset. He just kept saying he was sorry about how much and how bad it was. And that preceded a long weekend. And I had a immediate emergency kind of a test on Monday. I met with an oncologist on Tuesday. I like to tell people I paid bills on a Wednesday. I had a port put in on Thursday. I had a two pull kind of bone marrow test biopsy on Friday. Met with a lawyer to review my documents on Saturday. Sunday, I preached to a full house. Monday was Labor Day. Tuesday, made sure everything was right. And Wednesday morning, I was in a chemo chair, taking the first of 12 rounds or 12 sessions of chemo, and I would take 4 chemos at a time. So from suspicion to the chemo chair was 15 days. With two phrases I heard over and over, you can't wait, you don't have time. They're very careful not to spook me, but they would say, hey, if you've been meaning to take a trip, you ought to take it now. If you've been meaning to go see somebody, you ought to do it now, because it was growing like crazy. I would find out that next week that it had wrapped around my windpipe. Actually took pictures of it. It was threatening to choke me off. The doctor at that point said, you can't go anywhere without a cell phone. If you start to feel lightheaded or if your voice changes, you have to dial 911 before you pass out. It wrapped around my vena cava. It was so much around my heart that for the next 7-8 months, anytime I had a test or a scan or I was in the hospital, they would go, hey, he's got an enlarged heart. My oncologist would have to get involved and go, no, that's actually some of the tumors that are around his heart casting a shadow. And then I had one tumor in particular, was in my throat and it was exploding. And so they were worried. They were worried I'd stop breathing from that. So I had 3 points there. And then the tumor was I had lymphoma, stage 3, almost stage 4. And then I had another tumor, bulky mass, that was almost armpit to armpit. It wasn't quite, but it was growing backwards. It wrapped around my main artery. It wrapped around my windpipe. And it was almost to my spinal cord. And they were wondering if it was going to start messing with my autonomic functions. And so with all of those things going on, ironically, the only place I didn't have cancer was where I'd had pneumonia. So from basically the bottom of my ears to the top of my hips and pelvis everywhere, it was all over. And so they were just trying to keep me alive. And I was trying to get in my head that this was it. And what am I going to do? And how am I going to go forward? So,
Rodney, the way I view the ID Network so often is like a tribe. And here we are. You are a member of this tribe. And as a scout, you've kind of walked away from the tribe. You went out into a far distant country and you've looked over a cliff into a valley. You saw something, nearly fell in. You're coming back to the tribe and you're describing something none of us have seen. We know about people who have gone to the cliff. We know about people who have fallen over the cliff. In fact, we all believe the moment we die, we're going to be with God. We've given our life to that. But you've seen something and you've experienced something that we've not experienced. And now you're coming back to us and you're saying, guys, I've been there. I know what it's like. I know the moment where you're told you have a few weeks. Get your affairs in order. If you want to talk to your kids, talk to your kids. If you want to go on a trip, go on a trip. And now you're coming back. Now, praise God, we'll talk at the end about where your diagnosis is now and your health, which is amazing. But more relevant for our audience at this moment is, what did you see? What were the lessons you learned? What do we need to know about that precipice, that cliff?
Sure. Let me say a couple of things. We desperately in conservatism and in American Christianity, I don't care how you draw the pie, we don't have a theology of suffering. In other words, we don't have a practical way of looking at things that don't go our way, whether that's a car breaking down or a child being injured, or we just don't. We are pragmatically, we act like, well, I'm serving God, so everything should work out. And so the other thing is that I don't know any of us have any illusions of immortality. I wasn't surprised I was about to die. I was just kind of cheesed off that it was going to be at 48 instead of 68 or 88, you know, racing a motorboat over Niagara Falls. You know, that's what I figured. And so I'm cheesed off about that. So it's the timing. It was the timing and not the actual event. And I appreciate so much the opportunity, but I want to say it just so there's nothing less interesting to me than somebody talking about themselves. So I do this because you're my friend, not because I think self-promotion is a worthy goal. We determined pretty quickly a couple of things. One, whatever we're going through, we're going to keep the spotlight on Jesus. People said, man, you did really well with this. And I'm like, well, that's what you saw on social media. That's curated. Nobody wanted to see any pictures of me, you know, running to the restroom. Nobody wanted to see any pictures of me, you know, taking me 10 minutes to walk up a flight of stairs because my left foot doesn't work anymore. Nobody wants to see me popping the pain meds, 10 minutes into the church service. So I can be clear-headed long enough to share something from scripture. And by the time they really kick in, I won't remember what I said. Nobody wanted to see any of that. So keeping the spotlight on Jesus, we determined we were going to fight. That first few days as I was kind of reeling, I really quickly realized, you know, this two things. One, whether this is the last thing I do for Jesus or just the next thing I do for Jesus, I'm going to do this for Jesus. And that's it. And then the stark realization with me was, this is going to be the last sermon I ever preach to my kids. And if I pass and they're mad and bitter at the Lord, they're not going to be mad and bitter because of me. And I have had a great life. I've gotten to do things I never thought. I know where I'm from. I know my last name. I got to go to college. I got to do grad work. I got to work on all these things. I've gotten to preach in these places. I've gotten to write a little bit. I've gotten to work with college students and be a youth pastor. I never dreamed of this life. And just because it's not 68 or 78, I'm not mad and bitter, and I'm not going to let you be either. You can do that after I die, but you're not doing that right now. Jesus has been good to me. If he didn't do anything for me other than save me from my sins, that was more than enough. And so, no, I'm good to go. And you're not going to get that from me, because I'm not upset with the Lord. So if it's the last thing I do or the next thing I do, and then that phrase, this is the last sermon I'm going to preach to my kids, to my church, to people I've gotten to know through the years. And I'm not going to flub this one. I'm not going to do that. So with those kind of things in mind, then those kind of things, I read it later, that Kerry Schmidt had said that. I didn't actually read Kerry's book till after I finished treatment, but love Jesus, trust Jesus, live for Jesus. And I think his is a little variation, and maybe I had read it in a blog of his or something, but we adopted that family motto. This is what we're going to do. And we're going to go through another aspect that may be helpful to some folks. I don't really view anything I went through as suffering. By that, I mean, I was just sick. That was my job. I was sick. I had a team of doctors and nurses. I had specialists who were doing their best to keep me alive and to keep me from not reacting poorly to all the meds and the scarring and the cancer and the blood clots and et cetera, et cetera. But my family was watching helplessly. My family were suffering. My extended family were suffering. My church, week after week, you know, the hair is gone. The eyebrows are gone. The eyelashes are gone. And I got news for you. When you look like a Marvel villain, little children are scared of you. Those kind of things. And then, you know, couldn't walk up the stairs. And so it was just what my life was. But for them, it was brutal. And so I resisted that tag. I mean, I was just sick. They were the ones having to go through it. And so we tried to keep it normal. I insisted they go to school. And so, of course, right in the middle of all that, you know, COVID's coming. So we've got cancer and COVID and chemo. Everything shuts down. And of course, we're in the middle of a revitalization.
Talk about stacked against you at that point.
I'm not typically an emotional person, Rodney, but I think even in, you know, in hearing your story, I think a lot of our listeners are probably hopefully in the same boat that I am. Like, you kind of got me when you said, hey, like, you're not going to be able to walk anybody down the aisle. I got two daughters that are, you know, not even 10 yet. But just trying to wrap my head around like that possibility, like that's a really sad, you know, and very dark thought, you know, for me. But I think where we want to turn the conversation is this, like, even in hearing that, you know, we all know that, like, the Bible says, hey, our life is a vapor. It appears for a little time and vanishes away. But somehow in the back of our minds, we think my vapor is longer than yours. And even as a 37-year-old, I'm like, okay, he was 48. I still got 11 years before I worry about that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the direction where we want to steer some of this conversation about not just, you know, lessons you learn. We want to hear that, right? But to the, not the guy out there that says, hey, I'm immortal, right? But just not yet, right. You know, because we don't know when that day that you had might come for us.
Sure. Yeah. And just to maybe lighten the mood, but I did instruct my children two things. One, I've gotten very allergic to animals and dander. So I told my son on the way home from the funeral, you can stop and get a puppy. And then I instructed both my children, listen, don't let your mother take a date to my funeral. Just let that go a little longer.
It could be awkward for everybody, actually.
Yeah. So we use that to kind of break the ice, you know, when things would be grim and gray. And so,
yeah,
grim and gray.
Rodney, did you hear about the Catholic priest who went to hell recently? You heard this story?
No.
I don't think I have.
All right. There's two things. He said he went to the Catholic priest.
Yeah.
Went to hell.
Sure.
And he spent about 15 minutes there.
Okay.
And the only thing he said was men were walking around like dogs and that he was hearing Rihanna play 24/7. I was like, and that's the entire article.
Oh, so this is not a joke.
That's the entire article.
I thought you were setting up a joke.
Man. No.
I'm waiting for who's there. I thought you were doing a knock knock. I'm sorry.
No.
So wait. Men were walking around like dogs and Rihanna was playing.
And Rihanna was playing 24. That's all he said. He said, hey, I've been to hell and that's what it's like.
Well, I'm
like,
sure. Well, I don't know, man.
She's playing for the Super Bowl this year.
Sounds right.
It's like hell.
I would figure Baby Shark would at least get a rotation.
On a constant loop. Yeah, for sure. Well, let me ask you this, Rodney. When we talk about deathbed experience, we think to ourselves, okay, are most men prepared to die? And obviously the answer is no. That's what all of us are called to prepare men for crossing over this life into the next, to be in the actual eternal kingdom, the return of Eden. This is our desire. But what about pastors and ministry leaders? Do you think most of us are thinking through, like Drew said, are we ready?
I don't think so. I think that's why funerals stun us. We do a funeral and, you know, guy comes home and he's got flowers for his wife and chocolates. And he's looking at everybody saying, you're not cooking tonight. We're going out to eat, because he's for a moment really wrapped in, hey, I love my family. And, you know, this guy was only a few years older or whatever. I saw his family crying. And so we will focus in, but we kind of do that. And then we get back in the grind, and then we do that and get back in the grind because that's just tomorrow's thing. Or maybe we're almost not superstitious, but we're if we do this, you know, we're like inviting it. I mean, if we take care of some legal affairs, if we pick a guardian for our kids, you know, those kind of things, we're like inviting it, like all of a sudden that the Lord works off some type of superstition and he's no longer sovereign, or we don't believe in providence anymore. And we're typically we're typically very much instant people. If we want coffee, we go get coffee. If we want to eat out, we charge things. We got an iPhone 11 that works really well, but hey, there's a 13 and it's only $50 a month payment and stuff. And so we prioritize things that make an instant need or an instant felt need. And so I think generationally that's part of it. I don't see that. I don't think that. And the longer that adolescence is deferred as well.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
people
yeah.
getting married, and they're really not ready to be that ready for adulting. You know, and they write articles about, I made my bed this morning like it was Herculean. And so I think that's problematic.
So if somebody's sitting there listening, as Drew said, on the treadmill, maybe they're driving to work, and they're thinking, okay, like practically, what does that look like? What are some practical ways that we might prepare for our eventual departure? I mean, you've been there. What do we do as we walk toward that that eventual, we know we're crossing over, but it might come sooner. What should I have prepared now?
Yeah, thank you. I wrote down a few things, and I suggest to you learning in a trial is not an optimal option. You're like, well, when I get there, I'll do this and I'll have all this lead up. Number one, you may not have time. Two, I really do think trials are about application. I think they're for purifying and they're for applying. I went into it with what I had. I went into it, and if I decided, hey, I'm going to get life insurance now, I couldn't have. I couldn't pass a medical test. Well, some states, you know, they go back 2 years or stuff like that, or it's 2 years before it takes full effect. So because I don't know the time of the day, then I suggest to you provide for your family. Is there anything more heartbreaking than somebody passing away and the first thing you see on social media is a GoFundMe? I got to have money to bury my relative. When for, you know, $6-7, if you're young enough, or $20, you could get $300,000, or $40, you could get, you know, $500,000, get a 30-year policy of a term, and you'd be set. And this is what I would say. And again, as I've shared a little bit of this, different places or different opportunities. If you're not going to do that, if you're not going to stop what you're doing and put the book down or change what, if you're not going to do that, then you need to call your spouse's family and say, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, they're moving home and you're going to have to pay to bury me, because I won't take 20 minutes of my day and get this set up, because that's what you're doing. And she's going to be begging, or he's going to be begging on social media for people to chip in some money so I can just get you properly buried. And because no church is obligated to keep paying the spouse of the pastor, or the youth pastor, or the music pastor, then at some point they're going to say, we've got to hire somebody else. We don't have money for both. And we're really sorry. Now she's going to grieve, take care of kids, try and figure out school, and got to go find a full-time job, all because you wouldn't do this. So you got a decision. You can be a little uncomfortable for 30 minutes, or you can go ahead and make that call. And I think you need to look your spouse and go, look, I'm just too whatever, and I haven't done this. So again, I trip on a can, get hit by a truck, then I'm really sorry, but this is the person that you married. And I don't think any of us want to do that. That's in essence what you're saying. If I hadn't had good advice, I took care of some things when we got married, I redid some things in my 30s, and it was unbelievably comforting knowing my wife will be able to pay off the house. She won't miss my income. She can finish taking care of the kids. She can invest the rest. I had somebody that she trusted that would help her. And if I die, If I die that Saturday, there's no guilt there. There's no guilt. Provide for your family. Make sure that your affairs are in order. Even if it's just Dave Ramsey calls it a legacy folder. Even if you just got the stuff stuffed in there in a firebox in the garage or the closet, just something where the papers are, so they're not tearing everything apart and guessing passwords. I have a master password with all the accounts, and so my brother and my sister-in-law, I send it about every 3 months. I just have a reminder in a calendar. Hey, this is this. You can find everything here. Everything's in the garage, in this firebox, and you'll be able to figure out what's going on. It's 3 minutes. 3 minutes every 3 months.
With the extent of this audience and the amount of people that are listening, there is very little doubt with the amount of people that will listen to this episode that one of us will cross over in the next 12 months. We don't know who that is, but here's what we're saying. Get your affairs in order now, practically. That's a great statement that Rodney's saying. But Rodney, not just practical as it relates to financial and caring for your family. Talk about relationships. What would our relationships look like if we lived in the reality that, 3 months from now, I could be gone?
Sure. I think we would apologize more quickly. I think we would forgive more easily. I think we would value relationships. I swerved into something. I really did. I was everything and making sure. And like I said, I had our friend Sam at somebody's church was a lawyer. He agreed to come to my house and look over my stuff. I had everything but a medical power of attorney. And so I had that, I got that off my plate, made sure everything was right. And it was just such a blessing. Pardon me, and I'm gonna put it out there. And I thought, I'll make a little Facebook page, and there'll be a few people want to kind of follow, these next weeks. But I'll make it very easy for my wife to be able to put out the funeral arrangements. I did that, and I got real clever. I was like, pray for RNA, pray for Rodney and Andrea, and so this was my thought, and I kind of wrote it up again. I was really feeling like, these are some of the last things I'll do. So I said, thank God for pneumonia. I have cancer. Wrote out kind of what had happened, some of the ways God had moved, and got a doctor I wasn't able to supposed to get. Never waited for a test. I've still never waited for a test, to be honest. I've never waited for a result if it was physically possible. I have scans. I get the results that afternoon, even today. That's the kind of service the Lord has provided to me. And I don't sit around and wonder. And so we put that out there on a Sunday afternoon. And anyway, it's 30 some thousand people have read it. And I don't want to exaggerate, 1,000, 1,500 times it was shared. And I got to start, inadvertently hearing from people through my life. I got to hear from people when I was I ministered to when I was in college. I was their junior church pastor, and they got kids of their own. They work in a junior church now. I got to hear from people. I got to people in other countries. Some of the mission trips I got to take. A friend of mine, Leonel, there in Pinar del Rio. He's in Hibacoa, but anyway, and. He contacted the other pastors and some of the ones that I'd taught when I would be down there. And he's like all of Cuba's praying for you. And which is an exaggeration, but it was a sweet thing to say. And I got to hear people went out of their way. People went out of their way to do things I had forgotten, things I hadn't thought about in years. And I got this rare treat. And again, I know my last name and I know where I'm from. And I know my skills and what aren't my skills. But I got this rare treat. I got to get my flowers. And so you value relationships. Value those relationships. And make those important. And I think for me, really trying to value evangelism. This is what I'll do that outlasts me. And then value discipleship, one-on-one, life on life. I don't want to farm it out. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to spend my life just rearranging the deck chairs. I want to make sure I'm making an impact. And so passion and purpose, I think, ought to guide us in this area, because my life is short. If it's another 30 years, it's short. Passion and purpose. I don't want to sleepwalk through life. I don't want to Netflix and Hulu my way through life. I want to make sure what I do matters for the kingdom and impacts the lives of others with gospel truth.
I really do feel that image. You've walked back from this cliff. The tribe is sitting down. You're a part of us and a statesman who has experienced something that we will all eventually experience. And you've said, I've been to the land, I've looked over, and this is what you need to know that you're coming to. And your message today about relationships, about how you would prioritize your ministries, the practicalities of what that might look like, has been incredibly helpful to me, to Drew, and I'm sure our entire audience. As we close out, Rodney, can you just briefly give us an update on how you're doing? Because God has been working a miracle medically for you.
Yes, sir. I'm stable. I'm about 2.5 years out of active treatment. So for me, that number is going to be 5. They don't use the word remission with me because it was so chronic. So if I can do that another basically 2.5 years, then they'll say, okay, this is over. And so they're on the constant lookout for things about what might be next. Body took a lot of abuse, but I have checks. They check me every month, and then I have a full set of scans every 3 months. I tell people, I'm so healthy, I do this every 90 days. So for me, I run every 90 days, and that's how we choose to live right now. And then we get the all clear and we run hard for the next 90 days.
Rodney, we appreciate you sharing our story and being vulnerable enough to walk us through that. And I know many people are going to be blessed as a result of it. And the perspective shift you've helped us with. I'd love to make sure we plug you and your ministry just before we leave. So if people do have more questions, they can reach out to you for resources and maybe run some stuff by you if that's okay with you.
No, that's a great thing I get to do now. Almost every week I'll hear from somebody or I get asked to talk to someone. And there's a lot of credibility you have with lost people now if they realize it isn't 2 cars and a brick house and 2 kids. So hardenvalleychurch.com. And then you can reach out Twitter, just Twitter, Rodney Holloman. But any way I can help, it'd be an honor. And I appreciate you guys letting me talk about something so uplifting.
And it has been. It's any time I've ever spent time with you, Rodney, it's been a blessing. Thank you for joining us for the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to today's Idea Talks. If you would like to reach out to us, drop us an email at joshtice@ideanetwork.church. If you benefited from this podcast, we ask that you take a moment to show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing the podcast on iTunes. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you right here again at the Idea Talks podcast.